Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, hey, why are people into that, listeners? So it's taken me a while, but I'm finally releasing the footage from my Why Are People Into That live panel that I hosted at Camp Ravish, which is this sexy, kinky event just outside Austin, Texas. This was recorded in June 2017, and the atmosphere was pretty incredible. We were outdoors in this rural area by a river, and we were kind of under this awning decorated with this sort of psychedelic decoupage. It was really unique, and I had a great time, and it was super warm because it was June in Texas, but during this recording, it happened to be also lightly raining, which made for some serious, like, mud puddle fucking for other people. I observed other people fucking in the mud. But the reason that I'm telling you this is that you will hear the rain throughout this episode, which might be distracting, but I honestly, listening to it and editing it, found it kind of soothing. So I hope you do too. My special guest for this episode is JD, the legendary bondage educator from Two Naughty Boys. Thanks to the organizers for having me, and if you're in the Austin area, check out Ravish. The sex toy mavens at WeVibe are launching a pop-up shop in the LA and New York City Pleasure Chest stores all April long in celebration of their 10-year anniversary. So if you're in the area, make sure to check out WeVibe's line of romantic and innovative vibrators. Meanwhile, in Chicago, the Lincoln location of the Pleasure Chest just finished their remodel, and I hear it looks absolutely gorgeous. A great day to see for yourself would be the BJs and Beyond workshop on April 18th, hosted by Tania and Joe. Listeners in the LA area will want to show up for Verbal Domination with Simone Justice on Sunday, April 22nd. As always, Pleasure Chest events are free, and everything in the store, from the squirt-absorbing throw blanket to that latex puppy hood I've seen you eyeing, is 15% off for all attendees. To get all the info you need, check out pleasurechest.com/events and follow Pleasure Chest on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. All right, now back to the show. Who was at karaoke last night? Saw some of your cute faces.
I had a blast. Now I'm all tangled up.
How's everybody doing? Has anybody done anything so far at camp that they have never done before? What'd you do?
That's a good answer.
Oh, good answer.
I like it more.
Everybody's a comedian at Ravish Camp, Camp Ravish. Okay, everybody, thanks for your patience on the slow Saturday start. I've got my coffee here. One sec. So I'm Tina Horn. I'm very excited to be here. I live in New York City, and I've only been to Texas a couple of times, and it's been like 10 years, so I'm very happy to be in Austin and to be at Camp Ravish. So I do a couple of things. I got my start as a sex worker, mostly BDSM sex worker in the Bay Area. Now my focus is on writing. I do a lot of sex work activist journalism, as well as like teaching about various kinds of BDSM and leather subcultures. I've written a couple of books. One is called Love Not Given Lightly, and that is actually about kink and sex work in the Bay Area. And I also wrote a guide to modern dating, which is called Sexting. And the main thing that I do, which is my favorite thing that I do, is a podcast called Why Are People Into That? And I've been doing it for going on 4 years. It's totally independent. I produce and host it myself. And on every episode of the podcast, I have a different guest. And the guest chooses a
topic related to sex, kink, gender, and or love. And then we ask the question, why are people into that? We do it in a very non-judgmental way, often very raunchy, lots of sexy stories, often also very political, usually pretty funny, and dynamic and conversational. So that's totally free to listen to on the internet, download wherever you listen to podcasts, or go to whyarepeopleintothat.com. And so what we're going to do today, I've started doing this year, is a little bit of a live Why Are People Into That? So the idea is that I have a list here of dirty things I made. I always make the list at the last minute. I'm like, what is on my mind? And I also looked a little bit at some of the events this weekend to maybe discern what y'all are into or curious about. And basically, we're going to go down the list. So if anybody has a specific question about a specific topic that we're covering, I'm gonna, before we move on to the next topic, open it up for questions, because I want this session to be like highly participatory. I know that there's like a lot of different communities here, and so I'm excited that people might bring some of their curiosity to this space, and that might promote like understanding and experience and experimentation. So before we get started, I would love for JD, my panelist, I think everybody else is sleeping, which I can't blame them for, or maybe they're fucking in the woods, I don't know. Will you introduce yourself?
Sure.
Hi, my name's JD. I'm better known as JD of Two Naughty Boys. I'm here to teach anything having to do with bondage. Basically, I'm your guy when it comes to bondage. Anything suspension, anything shibari score oriented, anything fusion bondage. I have been teaching professionally for 25 years. I've co-authored two best-selling books, Two Naughty Boys Showing You the Ropes, Two Naughty Boys Back on the Ropes. I've also authored six books on paracord ties and knots, survival ties, basket ties, bracelet ties, quick release ties. I've coordinated and counseled the military. I've worked with people in scouts and survival skills. I've also done jewelry books. I've done leather corded jewelry books. Anything with a linear orientation. Even piping. I've done piping and instrument diagrams because I'm really good at wrapping pipe and such around building structures and footprints and what have you. I've been acknowledged by the International Guild of Knot Tiers for my contributions to tying. I'm an Aquarius. I love the color like smoky blue. Not too blue, not too black, but no. But yeah, no, it's fundamentally been my life journey to explore and experiment and create designs and ways of people connecting with both their own independent self-esteem because they made something beautiful, they made something that they're proud of. In the case of paracord, for example, I work with a lot of vets, a lot of people who are injured and going through a lot of depression, substance abuse issues, and they're trying to reconnect with their families, with their communities, and making these bracelets has enabled them to sort of both feel self-esteem and then also reconnect. And people go, hey, I want to engage with you, I want to talk to you, I want a bracelet from you. Mm. And then the bondage, which is sort of a real core part of who I am, is a way of connecting. It's a way of slowing down the central process. It's hot as fuck. And I find it incredibly alluring and tantalizing when someone is bound and fuckable and there's nothing they can do about it. It's really hot, especially when you're with someone you trust. I'm not saying this is happening at a bus stop or like casual encounters. This is not, I'm saying these are people you really care for and you trust and have grown to know. And that's it. So I have traveled the world doing what I do. I've taught in Japan, I've taught in Holland, I've taught in France, taught in Germany. Our books have been translated into foreign languages. One of my books translated 7 times. Japanese, Korean, German, French, Czech. It goes on. So I'm that guy. Hi, my name is JD.
I love those books. I definitely could tell you some stories about being at the dungeon, you know, with other dominatrixes, like sitting around waiting for the phone to ring with like Two Naughty Boys books, like open and like somebody being like, okay, wait, no, that's a granny knot. Oh God. Like, anyway, so we could go on and on about that. You know, my first question was going to be, why are people into bondage? And I feel like that's like an easy one for you, and you kind of already started, but
a little bit, yeah.
I would love if you would give sort of like a, like if there is somebody here this weekend that's like, what, tying people up? Like, yeah. What's sexy about that? I would love for you to start with, why are people into bondage?
I could tell you a little bit about what I've heard from others, and then I could give you my own personal experiences. Everyone's unique, everyone has their own angle on things. So I'm not gonna try to suggest that everyone's into this because of what I'm about to say, but I'll give you a little bit of a sampling. For me personally, when I was growing up, I've been in bondage since I was a kid. I've always really had a fascination with rope and bondage and tying people up. I think for me, it originally sourced from shows like Wonder Woman, you know, where she was tied up. I was, you know, going through puberty and seeing this fantastically bodied woman, you know, bound to a chair, cleave gagged, that sort of thing. Electro Woman, Dyna Girl. I grew up in a very sexualized part of San Francisco. I grew up in downtown San Francisco, Tenderloin. I'll just be really honest, there was a lot of prostitution, there was a lot of things going on, there was a lot of sexualization in my neighborhood. The girls my age, I was never engaged with anyone older than my own age, were very aware of sex. Sex was something that was really a part of a lot of the culture when I was growing up in middle school. And it scared the fuck out of me, to be honest with you. I was really intimidated by it. And so when I first started engaging girls, I liked to tie them up. Because first off, I was under control, I was able to initiate, and then it also slowed down the sensual process. Mm. So I didn't feel this pressure to be so overeager and then push it to this ultimate thing. So I was able to explore the body, I was able to take my time, and it was hot. I just created a lot of imagery around it. For other people, that's my origin story. It's developed into romantic partnership. My girlfriend's over here. It's a form of connection, it's a form of trust. It's our love language. It's just how we love each other. And so it's fundamentally about love. You know, I've often said, no matter what your fantasy is, I mean, I can tell you whatever you're into, I can tell you your ultimate fantasy is love. And that's basically, no matter whether you're into leather, whether you're into wrestling, whether you're into bondage, whatever it is, we all share that desire. And that's fundamentally what it's about for me. For others, some people have a lifetime fucking a very specific way, and it gets old, or the sex life kind of starts to dim because you're just not that into it anymore. It's just maybe for a variety of reasons, you're stressed out by family, you've got responsibilities, the kids are, you know, at your heels, you're running from daycare to work to, you know, God, I just want to drink and watch some Netflix. And so spicing up your love life, trying something a little bit out of your wheelhouse, can give you a new way of looking at your partner. And it also gives you a new way of approaching your own dynamic, because you're like, now I have something to explore, to learn, to get good at, and I have a partner, a willing partner, who, you know, fosters that development and that journey. And I've met a lot of people who are at the brink of divorce, the brink of breakup, and then they start going to some workshops, practicing with some books. Dan and I also have over 100 free videos on YouTube and our website, completely downloadable. And we shoot from the angle of what you would see if you're looking at the rope. So we put the camera here, and you just see my hands in the rope. So yeah, there's a lot of different stories. I've met people who've reconnected and with themselves and others through bondage. But I see it as a loving, sensual, and trusting process.
So. Do you like getting tied up, JD?
Yeah, cool. I do. How blunt can we be here? Really blunt?
I mean, on my show, you can be as blunt as you want to be.
I love when Ash, you know, ties me up and masturbates me. That feels good. I like getting fucked, so no shame there. And so, yeah, I like being tied up by the right person. It's a trust thing, you know?
Totally.
Because, like, some people, like, mistake that, oh, you're into bondage, and I'll tie you up. And it's like, well, I don't even know you. Like, slow your roll. Like, I'm still human. I have consciousness and a heart, and I have to, like, actually...
And compatibility.
Exactly.
Like, just because you're...
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, this is going to be true about
everything. You go, oh, you're in bondage. Go, cool. I'm over here. I'll see you in 2 minutes. I'm like, who are you?
Yeah.
I'm like, Dad,
yeah, buy me dinner. Come on.
Me.
Or buy me a breakfast taco. And I am definitely also a switch in most things, definitely with bondage. I'm actually really lousy at bondage. Maybe I should come to your classes, although I've been to so many and practiced so much. The thing that I love about being tied up is... First of all, like, relinquishing responsibility, it gets me out of my, like, cerebral space. And also, because I'm a switch, it, like, definitely, like, signals to me. I don't have to be the top, and I don't have to, like, make the decisions or be the director. But I also, physically, like, love having something to, like, strain against. I'm, like, a very active person. I'm very, like, active sexually. And so sometimes being, like, held down and, like, getting really excited and into things and just being like, ah, like the Hulk, you know? When are your bondage classes this weekend?
The first one is right after this.
Great.
I think it starts like right after this.
Like at noon?
Yeah, that's great. Like noonish or something like that. And that's bedroom bondage. So that's all material that you have in your bedroom. So you don't have to bring any rope. If you have a belt, if you have a pillowcase, if you have a pillow, if you have a towel, if you have a rack for your coat, you can take it off. And all those materials, I'll show you how to use those. This is like you just ended up on vacation. You're like, holy shit, I want to do some bondage. Bam, I'll show you how to do it.
Cool.
Then this afternoon is domination bondage. And domination bondage, just give you an idea, one of the ties I show you in 3 to 4 seconds, how you can have someone immobilized and fuckable, and they cannot escape within 3 to 4 seconds, man or woman, large or small, I promise you. I can take the largest person in the room, the strongest person in the room, and I will humiliate them.
Let's move on to our next topic. And this is one that I think is going to be really relevant to everyone this weekend, which is exhibitionism and voyeurism. Uh-huh. First of all, will you define exhibitionism and voyeurism
Sure.
for anyone who doesn't know the difference or can't keep them straight, so to speak?
Exhibitionism in a general way is someone who likes to be seen, someone who likes to make love in public, someone who likes to have their body, you know, admired. And someone who gets tantalized by eyes, by people watching them, by people seeing them do the things that most people do behind doors. And it can be anything. Some people are exhibitionists and they're just doing a stage show. They may be fully clothed and they just like to get out there and be seen. They like, some exhibitionists like to do karaoke. Some exhibitionists...
I've never heard of that.
Some exhibitionists like to fucking public. And then voyeurism is that sort of, you know, Peeping Tom-ish. And I say ish because it's that sort of, it's like to watch other people in a way that excludes you from that necessarily, I would add that there should be consent.
Always.
That voyeurism in itself, you know, can be questionable because I don't give you permission to look through my window and watch me and my girlfriend, you know, have sex per se. If it happens accidentally, you walk in, no problem, hey, no harm, no foul. But generally speaking, there are what I call safe containers, spaces that people have awareness that voyeurism may occur in like a group play area. And so they understand that, yeah, we might be playing and people might be watching. So there's assumed consent by agreeing to the standards of the room. And the same thing goes for, step it back for a second, the same thing goes for exhibitionism in many cases, because there needs to be some form of consent to see someone doing that too. So there's consent to be seen, and there's consent. Sometimes I turn and I go, oh my God, someone's junk. You know, I have to consent to that. You know, so. Just because I like to be seen doesn't mean I like to see. So. But those are the general gist of it: seers and doers.
Yeah, and we have you mentioned this, but you know, obviously, I think we're all aware here of the very strong social taboos that we have about sex being private, sex being something that happens behind closed doors, nudity being something that doesn't happen in public. And this is actually one of those taboos that I think I'm, in general, that I'm glad that it exists for society, for kind of the reasons that you mentioned. It means that humans can create spaces to enter into consensually to see and be seen in terms of nudity, in terms of sexuality. You know, just like any social taboo, a lot of the times it goes to an extreme place that has to do with shame, right? So then we're ashamed of our bodies, we're ashamed of seeing people naked, we're uncomfortable seeing people naked because we're ashamed of our own bodies, and you know, we have this strong idea that we're not supposed to see that. Also, when it comes to people's right to privacy and people's right to do what they are consenting, what adults are consenting to behind closed doors, people then like go to an extreme place where they're like, well, I get to police what you do, you know, behind closed doors, etc., etc. So the thing that is so amazing about spaces like this is that we can explore seeing and being seen and pushing on those taboos. Everyone here has not automatically default consented to like seeing and being seen or doing and being done with everything that could possibly happen here, but it's more of a space where people have agreed to be open to that. And so I think that is such an amazing opportunity for people to
start to realize, like, what is the difference between, like, what I am ashamed of and what my desires are and where my actual boundaries are in terms of what you like to do, in terms of being in groups, in terms of showing off, in terms of somebody else showing off to you.
No, I like that. I love that elaboration of it, because that's very true. And there's a grand irony. It's a grand irony. We will pay money, we will televise people beating the crap out of each other. Like, that's okay. We're okay with that. But if you show a nipple,
oh yeah,
you're gonna get arrested. Like, people go nuts. You know, recently on Facebook, for example, someone did an incredibly violent act, and I was up on Facebook for 2 hours. Because someone even mentioned it, act, it was horrible. It was ending the life of another person. I was up for 2 hours. So their terms of use reviewers left that up for 2 hours. I posted a picture that showed a nipple. It never saw the light of day. Their terms of use people were like, immediately, no. Someone murdering someone? 2 hours.
Yeah, let's you know, give that a little
we
space.
We have a really wild dynamic around our bodies and around sex. And this is a sacred event of connection. This is two people joining in sensuality and sharing this magical moment, be it intercourse or be it just pleasure around the body. And I think it should be celebrated, not necessarily violated in the case of consent, you know, but I think it should have a higher status in our society than having the opportunity for shame, really. I feel it's like we should be more shameful that we want to beat the crap out of each other and pay money to watch it.
I mean, if you like to consent to have the crap beat out of you, that is like
a whole other
topic. Yeah.
And you don't have to pay me. Fucking hit me. Let me do it with my pants down, for Christ's sake. Give me a moment.
Yeah, with your nipples out.
I know, exactly. I'm like, all right, do it again.
So speaking of beating the crap out of each other consensually in an erotic way,
yeah.
JD, will you tell the folks why people are into spanking?
Spanking's awesome. I'll just go straight to the awesome. When you get into sensation play, you really, you know, the person who's experiencing the sensation, the person who's delivering the sensation, really they can fall into a fantasy space in their mind that the event that's taking place in front of them might not even be what they're in. They're either reliving a childhood fantasy or a moment that, or they're into some kind of capture fantasy.
Oh yeah, kidnapping.
Kidnapping, torture fantasy. And this is the dance between fantasy and reality. We're not saying we want to be tortured, we're not saying we want to be captured and kidnapped by strangers, but that corporal punishment,
discipline.
Discipline.
Yeah.
I've been a bad girl, I've been a bad boy. That's one element of it. And again, it goes in all shapes and sizes, right? But then also just the percussion of the ass, the high thighs, low thighs, can stimulate your cock, stimulate your pussy. It feels good. It's also a localization of sensation, so you feel that warmth, you feel that sting. I mean, it's coming at the hand of your partner, you know, it could just be your equal partner, your dom, your daddy, your mom, or whatever dynamic you have. But it just feels good, and it feels, you surrender, you know, to the sensation. Mm. So yeah, it's like you can tell I'm into it because I'm like, oh, I don't know how to describe this. It feels really good.
This is very dry and academic, JD.
I know, exactly.
I would also like to add to that. I may be alone here, but like I'm really into butts. Like, are there any other butt loving people out there? Inside, outside, upside down,
holy
like
crap.
Sideways. I like.
Can I high five?
Yeah. So most of us have butts, and for the most part, yeah. I don't know your life. So that's one of the things that I love about spanking is.
That's a great call. I don't know why I missed that.
I mean, it's cool. There's so many things to love about it.
Yeah.
I mean, like as a top, as the person who is administering the spanking, as an ass lover, having an ass. Attached to a person, having a person like over my lap so that their ass is just like in my lap and I just get this is like they're surrendering, use the word surrender, they're surrendering to me and making themselves really vulnerable, which like it's hot for me that they're making themselves vulnerable, it's hot for them that they're making themselves vulnerable. And then I just get to like spend time doing lots of weird things to that butt, which you know, that's just really all you've ever wanted to do, right? So, I mean, there is, like, the percussive element. I'm a drummer, so I, like, really do, like, love to just be like, these are my bongos, you know? Especially if it's, like, a nice, meaty, juicy ass, like, really just trying to, like, to see if I can, like, pick them up, like, by the flesh of their behind is a fun game to try. You may never achieve it, but it is a great journey. Like slapping and punching, like when you have someone like over your lap or over your knee, OTK as we call it in the game, it can sometimes be harder to like really get like a nice punch in. But if you have someone like bent over a railing, like this one for example, or against a tree, which you might be able to do in this environment, then you can like really kind of like get a little bit more like ballistic energy in there. Ass worship is like often associated with like a submissive person who is worshiping their dominant by like kissing their ass, right? Which in a way is like can be like erotic humiliation or like a way of showing subservience. And I'm also into that. It's like dominant ass worship to spank someone, to just be able to like enjoy them in that way. So that's my rant about butts.
Well said.
It won't be the last.
That right there is the real answer. I was focused on something. Yeah, you're right. I mean, the ass is such a beautiful gift. Mm. It is such a beautiful gift. By the way, I'm a trumpeter. She's a drummer, I'm a trumpeter.
Oh, cool. I mean, yeah, you could definitely play trumpet. Yeah, no, you could put those skills to use on a butt, for sure.
Yeah, exactly. No, but it is, it's magnificent. I love butts so much. And then the thing you talk about voyeurism, it's so much easier to check out a butt than it is a breast. Because you can just, want to hear something, a little secret? This is horrible. I live in the city, so I can do this a lot. But when I see someone walking and I think, I want to look at their butt, I turn before they walk by me. So then it's their fault. I was already looking that way. I did not Google you.
Oh my God. I
pre-turned.
Oh my God, I totally do that.
You walked into my turn.
I actually didn't even, I'm not even like Machiavellian about it. I think I just started doing that as a teenager and I'm curious, so I'm just gonna turn. Oh, they just walked into my field of vision. I have the experience of being checked out and catcalled a lot more for my ass than my tits, for reasons that you might notice when I'm walking around. But the thing that's really great about that for me is that it doesn't actually like bother me as much, because by the time somebody is like drooling over me, I'm like already on my way. I'm gone, you know? So that's nice. But if somebody came up to me and started unconsensually spanking me, that would not be okay. But if somebody...
Or even talking about it. I mean, we're talking about, I'm on my way to work, or you're on your way to the podcast, or you're doing something. You don't need people going, hey, I would like to isolate a part of your body, and I would like to talk to you, stranger person.
Yeah, you can check it out.
Just be respectful about it.
Very true, very true. I want to segue a little bit from spanking to talk about other kinds of impact play, particularly because there are so many amazing vendors already set up here with implements that maybe some of you are like, what the hell is this pile of leather for? And the answer, my friends, is hitting butts. And other things, but impact play. So essentially, spanking is like sort of the most primal, you know, and simple, you know, gateway drug version of impact play, which basically means, you know, anytime you're gonna use any kind of energy to impact with another person's body, the idea to create some kind of sensation. You mentioned sensation play, so it doesn't necessarily need to be pain. There are all different kinds of sensations, from scratching to temperature play to like teasing to sort of like raising people's goosebumps and that kind of thing. And then getting also into lots of different sadomasochistic, erotic, consensual pain activity, which I'm also very much into and endorse. So it's like, it's a whole beautiful menu. And just because like I'm into like very extreme erotic pain, both giving as a sadist and receiving as a masochist, but I also like the slow, sensual, teasing kinds of warm-up and entire scenes that are more focused on that playfulness. So just because you're into really extreme things doesn't mean that it's like wussy stuff to be into the like lighter side. So yeah, impact play. Do you want to list some of the wonderful implements
I know a thing or two about this stuff.
I believe you.
One of the things I do is I train dominatrixes in all the materials that they work with, and timing and structure and stuff. This is my wheelhouse. But there's so many different ways of utilizing an instrument, be it a flogger, be it a staff, be it a be it a reed, or be it a paddle. Starting with like floggers, if you're starting off with floggers, you could start off with like your rabbit fur floggers, which are very soft. You don't feel much of a thud. It's more of a sensual kind of thing. You can go from there. You can go from like to like a buffalo hide, which would be like kind of in between, and they even have deer hide. And then you have like some really thicker leather, like flail flogger types of such. And so you can have, not all floggers are made equally. You can even have rope floggers. And those generally are gonna have, you're gonna distribute the weight of the flogger tails over the ass, over the thighs, over various parts, staying away from the kidneys, staying away from various organs that you don't wanna percuss and that sort of thing. You don't wanna rupture anything. As a former boxer, let me tell you, I got punched once and it's not hurting. Lasts for like 4 or 5 days. Anyway, sorry. Sorry to break down. Anyway, so the other thing you have is like you're percussive. So some people really like, they don't like the tapping. So you could do, and then the sting, the real sting is like, of course, like a single tail and a more isolated, more focused.
So
the
single tail is like, yep. You think of like Indiana Jones bullwhip, right?
Something
so
like
so
that,
whereas
shorter,
a flog-
yeah.
yeah, whereas a flogger is going to be like a handle with like falls,
yeah.
like you were saying, like either leather or rubber or rope or like
yeah,
any kind of
bike tires.
Yeah, like
all,
if you
yeah.
think of like a cat o' nine tails, right?
Okay.
But then and then a single tail is the much more like localized, concentrated,
yeah.
and the more the smaller the surface area, the more the sensation is going to be
yeah.
like a sting, and the broader the surface area in general, the more it's going to be sort of more thuddy. And some people prefer thuddy to stingy, and some people like it all.
Yeah. Absolutely, and then you have then you have various solid objects. So you can have your broad paddle, which is more of a percussive, and it goes deeper. It goes deeper into your ass, deeper into your thighs.
Not like into your
not
ass. That's
your
another.
Ass.
We'll
yeah,
get
the
to
feel,
that.
Yeah, yeah.
there are paddles actually that
are
made of
yeah.
silicone that you can like turn around and then fuck, but don't. You know,
yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, but, we'll get there.
And I say ass like on the broad side, if you will. But then if you notice on the table back here, they do have various instruments, and then one of them has a gap in it, like a symbol, like some kind of character or something. But when you spank someone, that's like I don't know if anybody goes to, used to, probably people don't do this anymore, but they used to go to suntan salons, and they put a sticker on your hip to see, you know, like a little dolphin
Playboy bunny.
Yeah,
yeah,
or to see how tan you've gotten. Well, those are the equivalent in a paddle. So when you paddle someone, it'll make red mark around everything except for that one gap. So it's kind of cool. And you leave that on your partner.
Could say slut, for example.
Could say anything. Yeah, it could be a heart. And then it just, the list goes on. Anything you can grab. It's really up to people's... I've played with even rods, even metal rods. Call it a thumper. It goes deeper into the skin.
Yeah, or leather belts.
Leather belts, exactly.
I'm a big
your
fan
fist,
of...
A fist-loaded fist. I've played with, like, boxing gloves, like, bag gloves. You know, like, a little fist load. Or, you know, it's really, if you want to get fiendish, they have these cut gloves that are, like, sharp. They're, like, chainmail gloves to keep your... And you can spank with those. So you can add to your spanking with those types of things.
Yeah, and canes also tend
yeah.
to be stingier, and because we are in the woods, you really could just pick up any... A cane is a stick, so you can really just pick up any stick and use it as a switch go to town on someone. While we're talking about, like, all of the different kinds of impact play, you know, I think it is important, first of all, it can't be stated enough to say that there is a difference between... you know, consensual erotic sadomasochism and assault. And this is really a matter of both partners desiring to hit and be hit, and hitting and being hit on particular places on the body. And it doesn't necessarily have to involve sex per se, although it certainly can. The butt is very close to other parts of your body that you may want to involve in your sexuality, and the blood that rushes to that area during sadomasochistic activity on the butt, like spanking, everything from spanking to caning, can definitely be really arousing. But it can also be something that you can do to explore kink with someone. You're totally allowed to have a boundary of, for example, like keeping your clothes on, or keeping your leather shorts on, or keeping your bikini on. if you want to explore and experience these things and not feel like, oh, I don't want to sleep with that person, but I'm curious about being spanked. Yeah, I would definitely like encourage people if they, and this really applies to everything that we're talking about. If you like are curious about being tied up by someone that you don't necessarily want to get fucked by, like just like explain that that is your boundary and like put the emphasis on, and this is what I talk about a lot in my like dirty talk classes and in my books, like put the emphasis on the thing that you want and then make the boundary also be a part of that and feel like just as excited about expressing your boundaries as you are about expressing your desires.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're a dedicated Wired People Into That listener, then I know what's on your mind. Porno, vibrators, butt plugs, lube, bondage, and all the best pleasure products money can buy. So I'm ecstatic to tell you about a limited time offer from my friends at Adam and Eve. Go to adamandeve.com, pick out just about any item, and get 50% off your order. On top of that, you'll also receive 3 free adult DVDs plus a free mystery gift. Who doesn't love a sexy free mystery gift? Plus free shipping on your entire order. So go to adamandeve.com and use code PEOPLE at checkout. That's PEOPLE, PEOPLE, at adamandeve.com. Now back to the show.
Do you want to pick our next subject? From this scratchy list that I have here.
Cool. I'm going to go with age play.
Awesome.
Because that's often confusing and something that people, might want to learn a little bit more about. Especially people who have children. It's always a challenge for people to sort of project and to find that space of comfort between dynamic between age.
So let me define age play now that we have tantalized you about this. So has anybody heard of a community, or does anybody identify as a little? Is anybody, are there any littles out there? They're napping. That's cool. So I think that there's a playground that has been designated as the Littles Playground. You might have seen that in your materials and wondered what that's about. And basically, age play describes any kind of role play, fantasy, or identity persona, and I'll get into sort of defining that, that has to do with pretending to be or embodying an age that you are not currently. Now, this tends to be people playing with being ages younger than they are, which for most of us, I think, we have all, like, I'm 34, so I know what it's like to be 30. I certainly know what it's like to be 25. I also know, I have been 18 and 10, right? So this is like actually drawing from my own experience. And I haven't been any age that is older than I am, but I do sometimes like to play older. But I think it's a bit more common for folks to want to get back to a place of more innocence, or to be a kind of person that they maybe weren't when they were younger, right? So maybe you weren't super slutty when you were in your early 20s, and so you want to sort of role play as a different version of that. So for some folks, this is going to be like a role play or a fantasy that they want to play out with their partner, that they may want to set up a scene for an event like this where they're going to be like, okay, like I'm going to be, it's my 21st birthday, and like you're going to be like the bartender at the bar that like I've never been to before, and you're going to take me home. And for some people, they really start to want to more embody or identify with or live as, if you will, to get a little psychological, their inner child or their inner younger person, right? So I have a lot of friends who are adults, well over the age of 18, qualified, legally consenting adults who also, in a way, like, identify with having a part of themselves that they like to, like, a sort of a headspace that they like to go into that sometimes is 15, sometimes is 10, sometimes is as young as, like, 4, right? And then you may have heard of, like, adult babies where somebody, like, really wants to, like, wear a diaper and just, like, totally go into that state where they are, like, helpless and just all about, like, loving their mama's tits, you know? So the thing that I really want to emphasize about this is not about a pathology of sexualizing children in an inappropriate way. I'm just gonna, like, put that out there. This is about people consensually, like, exploring, like, what that age has meant to them as a way to, like, access something that they want, and it might be sexual, or it might be, like, just sort of, like, a way of accessing, like, a play space or a sensual space or a way to connect with a dynamic with their partner. And sometimes people will have a dynamic with their partner where they have, like, a little girl persona, right? So, like, I'm 34, but I have, like, a little girl persona who is, like, a bratty 12-year-old, just hypothetically. And then I might have a relationship with my partner where my partner is my daddy, right? So, again, this is not necessarily about daddy issues, which gets thrown around a lot. This is not necessarily about me sexualizing literal people in my family. This is about, like, my daddy takes care of me. My daddy loves me unconditionally. This is about, like, in the same way that when we were younger that we might play house and played with, like, archetypes, it's about, like, embodying all of those archetypes, sometimes to get off, sometimes just to be able to access that play space that we are not really allowed as much as grown-ups. Okay, so that is, like, my intro to what age play is. But why are people into that?
There's a lot of misconceptions as well, because the terminology of the daddy-girl dynamic, for example, it's very similar to sort of a master-slave dynamic, where there's sort of somewhat a caretaker, someone who oversees, someone who's nurturing, and then someone who's receiving, someone who's, you know, fostered, someone who's taken care of, someone who feels protected. So you hear someone, you might hear me call my girlfriend baby girl. I don't see her as a baby girl. She's quite a woman. And I love her being a woman, and I'm into her woman. But I do call her my baby girl. And so there's sometimes someone will get overhear something and think, oh, I get it. And I go, no, you don't. Like, it's not as simple. And I know that after, you know, some of the things that I go through in my head when I'm thinking about daddy, baby, girl, is it's been a long day. We both work hard. And I come home. I'm the daddy. And I just want to hold my baby girl. And my baby girl happens to be a woman. And so it's, the dynamic is sort of, you know, it doesn't necessarily, it can have age elements, but it also has sort of a surrendering, very tender sort of dynamic, because someone could stand up and go, "That's clearly a woman." And so that's, for me, I mean, it's protecting, it's a sense of safety, a sense of surrender, a sense of trust, passion, a sense of getting it, you know? Because, I mean, we all work a day. We all get through our life. We all have to hustle, and most of us have to hustle for other people, and it sucks. It sucks. And so when you have a partner, it's like, you know what, I get it, daddy. And you look back at them and say, you know what, I get it, baby girl. And it's just where your head goes, where your head goes. And that's the thing, we have an advanced cerebral cortex. We have a sense of self and consciousness. Have a blast.
Yeah, word.
We can create fantasies in our skull. We can implement those fantasies. And it's a very human thing, and it's a gift. And so you can have a good time with it. Our capacity to imagine and realize and implement and activate our thoughts is just awesome.
Hell yes.
It's just awesome. So many ways to do it.
I do it.
Yeah, everybody go out and do everything we talked about in the next hour, and then report back. But anyway, thank you so much for coming. Thank you so much to Ravish for having me and having us. If you like this format and you're curious and you want to learn more about all different kinds of the wonderful spectrum of sexuality, I would love it if you would subscribe to my podcast, Why Are People Into That? You can find out more about me and my work at both whyarepeopleintothat.com and tinahorn.net.
Thanks, everybody.
Hey, folks, just a quick announcement. Thank you for shouting out for the
vendors. The vendors are set up in the pavilion, kind of around the perimeter, the back perimeter. There's erotic art. There's Wicked Wishes toys. We've got Sinful Leather products being sold, and Jen and Dr. Bob are selling some toys and shoes and books and DVDs. It's pretty awesome. We've got a vendor truck coming up for lunch.
It's Garbo's lobster rolls, hamburgers, and the lobster rolls are $13, and the second one is $8, so pretty much you get like two for $20. We have fries and chips, and there's a special too. I don't know what the special is, but I know it's like, I think, right under $10. Really good food. So make sure you eat up lunch and you enjoy yourself. And
also, there is a giant box of free condoms and lube, if you have not seen that. It is sitting kind of back where the community message board is, so take advantage of both those things. So community message board, free condoms, and yes, commissary. If you want an awesome Camp Ravish t-shirt, they are at the commissary, as well as other snacks and goodies. Thank you so much for attending the podcast panel.
Thanks, Emily.
Thanks, Tina.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.